want, tell me what you see, where you wanna go, what you wanna be. If you have a dream, you can make it there with a lot of work and a lot of prayer. If you take your time, gotta be precise, gotta have a plan, double check it twice. Wait, hold up, slow down, devil need advice. Someone's gone before, maybe talk to them, then after you do, go and talk to him. Great, it's gonna come, maybe not tonight, take your time today, teach you something right.
Got a lot of friends, made a lot of ends, Twitter, you the trend, him a Bentley Benz, but you moving kinda fast, keep sweating, you gotta make it last, live every day like it's your last, but don't forget to have a blast.
Welcome, welcome to Time Out. I am your host, Sylvia Crawley Milbury, and I just want to give you a few updates before we get started on tonight's show. The new summer issue of Monarch is in stands right now. Go get it, Barnes & Noble's, Walden Bookstores, Walmart, Walgreens, Target. You can pick it up. We have Faith Evans on the cover. I think she has the Fountain of Youth because it seems like she is not aging at all. So go get the new Monarch. And also, I want to thank everybody for participating in our live Twitter chats that we're doing with Monarch on Twitter. So thank you for your questions that you're asking, and it's going really well. And if you haven't been a part of a live Twitter chat, it is really a cool concept, so you may want to check it out. Those happen on Thursdays at 3 p.m. I will post the next one on the Time Out website as well as my personal website, my personal Facebook site, I mean. Tonight, we have a very interesting guest, a couple of guests, actually. We have Derek and Queen Esther Smith. Derek, thank you for being on the show. I'm going to start with you, and then we'll follow up with Queen Esther. But, Derek, thank you for being with us tonight.
Okay, so it's a pleasure being here. Yeah, I'm honored to be here.
Okay. So we're going to start. You have an interesting story. I just found out from interviewing you before the show that you actually played football and was recruited for football by a junior college school, Montgomery Junior College. Tell us about that situation.
Well, yeah. When I was about to graduate, you know, I played on Reno Suck College's first team, his first year as head coach. So I played under him for that first year. And let's just say I didn't go to school like I should have back then. You know what I mean? If I knew what I knew now, I would have went. But my grade situation was kind of – my grade point average was kind of low. So I ended up trying to go to a junior college before and trying to, you know, with the hopes of transferring to a major college after like 2 years or so. But that situation fell through because the coaching staff had got fired. And the new coach had to start us through the whole recruiting process all over again. So I ended up changing my mind and ended up going to the Navy.
Okay. So you went into the Navy, and then you figured out very quickly that that didn't work for you. Tell us about your time in the Navy.
Well, it was a situation where I enjoyed and I respected what the Navy had actually had done for me, just that the mentality that I had at the time, I couldn't stand authority. So me and the Navy didn't get along. That's just rank and file. You got so many superiors above you and people that you had to follow orders from, and just me and orders wasn't getting along.
So would you say, what are some of the lessons that you learned from being in the Navy that you still apply to this day?
One of the things I think that I always took from Navy and continues to remain with me today is the fact that you have to establish order, whatever it is that you do, whether it be a business, whether it be, you know, a family structure, whatever. It has to be some type of order involved in order, you know, to not be in chaotic situations. That's mm-hmm. one. That's one of the main ones. And, the other thing that got me was just the ability to be able to travel the world and see different things and experience different cultures, things like that.
Okay. So You said earlier in your answer that you had a problem with authority. Do you think that's why you felt like, you know, I have to establish my own business because I don't really want to answer to anyone? Would you say that was correct?
I would say it's 100% correct.
Okay. Talk to me about when you got out of the Navy, you had an incident in 1987. Talk to our listeners a little bit about this is one of your many timeout moments, but talk about that period of time in your life.
Well, 1987 was a year I like to forget, but I can't because it's part of my history, it's part of my past, and I embrace it now, you know what I mean, like I do, you know what I mean, the good points in my life. Around that time, I, you know, fell off like a lot of people. I started indulging in drugs and using and whatever, and it just led to a whole period of it. Like, it was like a dark year or so, I would say, and which culminated in me ended up in the penitentiary after about a year or so.
And what was the actual charge or the incident that, you know, caused you to be in the penitentiary?
That was a robbery back then.
Okay. So and that was in May of 1988 was when the robbery happened, and you got sent to prison, and that was from 88 until what year?
Until 2000.
2000, okay. Mm-hmm. So while you were in prison, in 1990, you made a decision to pursue an education at Ohio University. What made you come to that decision while you were in jail, and how did you even know that you could pursue a college education while you were there?
Well, one of the ways that you find out is they take you through a little orientation when you get there, and they tell you all the opportunities that's available for you once you get to your parent institution where you're going to be spending your time. I always had the inkling to want to go to college, and I always knew that I would at some point, but I never knew it was going. My campus was going to be a penitentiary. But I went, and it was like early 88, I think it was, like sometime in mid-88 when I started, mm-hmm. and I finished that associate's degree program in 1990.
And so what was your – you actually majored and minored. Tell our listeners what your major and your minor was in.
Well, I had a major in psychology and a minor in sociology and also an associate's degree in social sciences.
Okay. So – and you actually did – you got your associate's degree, and you are actually one elective away from getting your bachelor's degree. Can you explain to our listeners – why you did not get your bachelor's degree?
Well, yeah, the way they had it set up in the institutions where if you were to, and it was rare that anybody did accomplish a bachelor's degree in the penitentiary, but the way they had it set up, if you achieved a bachelor's degree, then you could no longer receive funding to go to school. And I wanted to continue, you know, going to school or whatever, so I chose not to take one particular class that came on a regular basis so that I could continue to stay in school and then wouldn't have to worry about missing that class when it was time for me to take it. But the way mm-hmm. it worked out, I ended up leaving the institution before I could take that class. And that's the only one I need now to have my bachelor's degree conferred.
Well, I want to encourage you to send that paperwork in, send that exam in online, and definitely get that bachelor's degree, just because you never know when you're going to need it, you know, especially in this kind of economy. And then in 2001, there was, first of all, you got out of you got out of prison, mm-hmm. and, you know, you had goals, obviously, to get your life back on track. In 2001 is when you started the process towards owning your own business. And you came in contact with a name by the name of Gary Murray, who was a friend of your father's. Tell our listeners about how you ended up getting your first building.
Yeah, well, basically, Gary Murray, like you said, he was a friend of my father's before my father died. My father died when I was like five years old or so. And from the time I can remember, Gary always took me under his wing and looked out for me as if I was his own. And when I had came home from the penitentiary in 2001, just happened to be riding past his building, and, you know, it was still sitting there in this dilapidated state. And I asked him when the next time I had seen him if he still owned the building. And his response was that he still owned it and asked me if I wanted to do something with it. And that night he threw me a key, and the rest is history.
So when I talked to you the other day, you said pigeons and raccoons were habitating in that building. What did you have to do to get the building up and running?
Well, the first thing I had to do was get some wheelbarrows and a dump truck and wheel out and barrel out all the excrements from the pigeons and the raccoons. And I think that took about a week or two to get all that out of there. And just looked at the shell of a building and just started from there.
Wow. And so where did the funding come from? Because you told me that it cost close to $100,000 to repair the building. And I've been in the building. It's come a long way from having pigeons and raccoons habitating in it, by the way.
Right.
But where did you get the funding for it?
I ain't going to lie. I was hustling.
Okay.
Hustling to get the money. Just hustling to get the money, whatever I could. You know, there's more ways. So then, you know, most people, when you say hustling, the first thing they think about is drugs or whatever. But there's many, many ways to hustle. You know what I mean? It's just whatever it took for me to accomplish my goals, that's what I did.
Was there ever a thought in your mind that, you know, if the hustling went south, you know, if it went bad, that you would end up back where you started in prison? Was that ever a thought in your mind?
Oh, yeah, that's always in the back of your mind. And if you're out there hustling, it ain't in the back of your mind. You're in the wrong profession. You need to try something else if you're not always conscious of the fact that you can end up locked up, dead, or something, you know what I mean, from that game.
That leads me to my next question, which you and I had an extensive conversation about this. And, Derek, first of all, I want to thank you for being so transparent because you know, some of the questions I got to ask you were questions that I always wanted to know, and this is one of them. Why, and this is something I never really understood, if you know that the end result to hustling and, you know, this kind of drugs and gang life or whatever it may be, if you know that the end result is going to be to either end up dead or in prison, Why do you play the game?
Well, if I could answer the question, I'm going to answer it exactly as I answered it when you asked me before. And at the, you know, and this is probably the most profound answer you could get is that you think when you're in that state, when you're in that game, you think that the risk is the reward is greater than the risk, basically. You know what I mean? You have it in the back of your mind, but you're always thinking like, oh, it ain't going to happen to me because I'm slick and I'm not going to get caught. Or you know what I mean? But inevitably, everyone who takes that chance and remains to take that chance eventually gets caught. And it's, you know what I mean? It's no way that you can actually make truth out of a statement because there's not a day in jail that's worth your freedom.
All right. Okay, so so you opened up the club in 2002. You know, you repaired it. You got some wheelbarrows and something. You hauled out all the stuff and you got it somewhat decent where you know you could get people in there. So it's 2002 and the club opens. Talk to us, talk to our listeners about what type of club it is because. You said to me earlier that you were in Columbus and you came to Steubenville and you noticed that there was something lacking. So talk about what your vision was for 106. And for the listeners who are just tuning in, I'm talking here with Derek Smith, and he owns a nightclub called 106 in Steubenville, Ohio. So talk to me about in 2002 when the club opened, what was your vision for this place?
Well, actually, it was my original thought was that I would have a club that would cater to the late night crowd. You know what I mean? People, cause, you know, most of the your regular establishments close around 2:30, and around 2:30, what I had started to notice is that people wasn't really ready to go in yet. You know what I mean? They still had a little bit of party left in them, So my idea was to try to pick up the crowds after they left. Like at the during that time, there was two other establishments that was open. There was the Safari Lounge, and there was the Elks was open at the time. And you know, you had a couple of various spots over in Weirton, but most of them, most everything closed down at 2:30. And my sentiments were the same as everybody else. At 2:30, I really wasn't ready to go in back then, you know. And so when I got this building in my possession, I saw a way to possibly fill that gap, you know what I mean, that little 2:30 to like 4 in the morning gap, you know, because it's usually about 4 o'clock you can notice people start winding down. But at the time I thought, if I could get something to just, you know, cater to people from that 2:30 to 4 o'clock era, I might be able to find some success in that.
All right. Okay, so in 2003, a shooting happened.
Yes.
Talk to us about that time moment right there in your life.
Wow, that was one of the biggest time outs, because, you know, at that time I really had some things going on, and I, you know, life was looking up, and there was some promise in the future. And an individual, we won't even state no names, but an individual took the liberty to take care of one of his beefs inside my establishment, where he ended up shooting another individual, which invited the police to my building. And then another individual, whose name we won't mention, happened to have some drugs stashed in my building, which I didn't know nothing about. And once the police came in, they found the drugs, they charged me with them, and I ended up going back to the penitentiary and spending another 5 years behind that.
Why would you say, because you said this is your biggest timeout moment, the first time you went to prison, you went for 13 years.
Yeah.
This time you went for 5 years. Why was this your biggest timeout moment as opposed to 13 years? Because it seems like that would be harder than 5 years.
Well, yeah, and on the surface it would, but I caught the first case, I think I was 22, and I really didn't have anything going on. I was just recently released from discharged from the Navy. I didn't have no direction at the time. I didn't actually know what it is I wanted to do in my life or anything like that. So I was just aimlessly wandering around, just doing whatever I could to survive. And so when I end up catching the case and going to the penitentiary, I didn't feel like I really left too much behind, other than the fact that, of course, I miss my family and things like that, but I didn't really have nothing established, so I didn't miss nothing. I didn't really, you know what I mean? It was nothing for me to really miss while I was doing that time, so it was a little bit easier to do, as opposed to when I went back. I was out for 3 years in between that 5 years, and when I was out for those 3 years, I started establishing stuff. I started coming into my own and started coming up with some ideas for my future, and started putting the wheels in motion. And that case, when I caught that case and it set me down for those 5 years, you know, it was doubly worse than the first 13, because, like I said, I had a lot riding, you know what I mean, when I went in that second time.
Yeah, so at this time, you had 106. You had employees who depended on you. How many people did you have on staff at 106 at that time?
At that time, I would say probably about the same as it is now, probably about 10 people.
Okay, so you had a 10-man staff, and would you say that was mostly family and friends probably?
Yeah, I want to say it was all family. Yes, it was all family at the time, yep.
Okay, so you have 106, you have a 10-man staff of all family, you've got dreams, you've got goals, and so now you spend another 5 years in prison. Talk about just your time there. What did you do? Because the last time you pursued an education at Ohio University, this time...
Right.
What did you do to occupy your thoughts and your time?
Well, I definitely couldn't go back to school because I had exhausted. I already had acquired like 250 credit hours. And then during the time when I went back in that time, I don't know if you remember this or not, but the Clinton administration had done away with financial aid for prison inmates. What had happened was there was a public outcry about people going to penitentiaries and getting college educations, and people was on the street struggling to send their kids to school. So there was a big thing that came out. So school was not an option that time. The only thing I had to hold on to was the dream I had, which was 106. I had that building. The building was well, it wasn't actually all the way mine, but I did. It was promised to me. So I did know that I had something to come back to once I got out. So I spent that time between the law library trying to get myself out and preparing myself to pick this torch up with this building and continue on with the progress I had already started.
Okay. So you're in there, and you got, obviously, you've got goals and dreams about what's going to happen with that building when you get out. Did you write any of those goals down? Were you writing while you were in there?
The only thing I can remember putting on paper was just like designs of like how I would lay furniture out. Other than that, far as any of the details of what I was going to do with the building and how I was going to do everything, you know, on paper, everything, I never put nothing on paper. I always just kept things in my memory. I've been blessed with a good memory. So I think I just keep things, like I'm writing a book now, and I'm writing it in my head. I'm not going to write nothing out until it's time to actually start writing. So I keep it in my head. I keep everything in my head.
Why do you keep everything in your head? Why do you think you do that?
Well, I think it was part of my nature, but during the course of during that time, I read a book called Malcolm X. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with that book. And in that book, Malcolm X's employer, and I can't remember his name right now, but I do remember him telling him he was writing numbers, and he told him never to write nothing down on paper. And it sort of like jived with my philosophy. So ever since then, it has become my philosophy for sure. You know what I mean? So ever since then.
Right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will be right back with Derek Smith after this quick break.
So you think you know something about fantasy sports, huh? Well, I've got a challenge for you. Would you be willing to go head-to-head against some of the best minds in fantasy sports, like the FSP crew, The Master, Black, Jeff the Joker, and others? Well, for a limited time, you can acquire your own fantasy team. That's right, you can own a fantasy football, baseball, or basketball team and beat the host of fantasy sports and politics at their own game. For more information, go to fantasysportsandpolitics.web.com. That's fantasysportsandpolitics.web.com.
We're live right here with Time Out. I am your host, Sylvia Crawley Milbury, and we have Derek Smith with us tonight, as well as Queen Esther Smith, and we're going to get to her in just a few minutes. Derek, you said that earlier when we talked, you said that you were in Columbus, you came back to Steubenville, you saw what was missing, and you didn't really focus on the money. And at this time, you had served your 5 years, you got out of prison, but you have a clear-cut philosophy for how to do business. Can you explain to our listeners about what it is you focus on? Because you said, you know, you never really focus on the money. Talk to our listeners about that.
Well, when you spend too much time focusing on the money, you end up coming up short of money. I can't even explain to you why it works this way, but this has just been my experience. If you spend too much time constantly focusing on the dollar, then you end up coming short. What you need to do is what I did. I ain't gonna tell nobody what they need to do, because everything ain't gonna work for everybody the same way it worked for me. But what I did was I focused on the actual business at hand. Well, what would I expect? What would I want if I was going to a place like this? You know what I mean? How would I want to be treated if I went to a place like this? And I focused on those type of things and thought about the customer, the client, the patron, whoever that is. My thing was to satisfy them to the point where they couldn't wait till the next week to get back, because at the time I only opened up on weekends, like every Friday and Saturday night. So my philosophy was to make this place comfortable, so and then even more comfortable the next time you visit. You know, and therefore the money came with that. So, you know, I wasn't thinking like, okay, I got to make sure I get your $10 next week. I was thinking about how I'm going to make this more comfortable for you next week. Your $10 would come with that. That's the way I look
right.
at it.
Right. You said that you made a promise to 106. What was that promise that you made to the people that came there?
Every week your experience will be better than the last week.
Right. So, I mean, I think that goes for any business, you know. I think if there you have to figure out what the need is. And if you can
right.
solve a problem or fulfill that need, I think your gift will make room for you. You know, and
right.
so
right.
I think this is a business model that can work for pretty much everything. You know, if you focus on fulfilling that need and doing service and servicing others, the money and success will just come. So I thought
right.
that was very interesting when we had that conversation about that. And so, okay, so you got out in 2008.
Yes.
Okay, so when you got out, obviously, you know, you got to start all over again. You don't really have a lot of money. So you told me that you kind of surveyed everything. Talk about that period of time when you got out after serving the 5 years in prison.
Well, let me mention, I failed to mention one thing, and we always got to give credit to God, because during that last 5 years, I did manage to get saved during that period of time. And I think that helped with my philosophy when I came out, because I didn't want to just come out and go back to doing the same thing I was doing before I went back, as far as the hustling and all that type of thing. I had a new perspective, you know what I mean? And I believe it was the touch from God that actually did that, you know. So, and I didn't remain close to God's bosom like I would have liked to, but I still had that touch of God in me that helped shape the life that I was trying to build from that point on. So it was that, and that, and the desire not to go back to prison that
mm-hmm.
forced me to sit back and watch things for a while before I actually jumped off into anything. Just let me sit back. Well, actually, my brother had a store at the time too when I got home, so that kind of helped a little bit. I put a little effort into joining up with him and helping him out in his store, and you know that took care of us for a little while. You know what I mean? And then we end up moving on to something. I end up getting pointed back toward the building and went back.
Okay. So, so you ended up developing a personal relationship with God in prison.
Yes.
Were there church
yes.
services for you there? Like, how did it happen? Were you just kind of in your cell?
They have several different chaplains throughout the institutions for whatever faith. They got a Catholic chaplain, they got a Baptist, they got everyone. They try to serve everybody's needs as far as religious purposes go. But what had happened, this was something unique. What happened to me was I was struck by God. God led me to join in forces with a few other guys that was like-minded, and we ended up creating a group inside the institution called the camp. We was at the camp. There's a penitentiary and there's a camp outside the penitentiary. Well, we ended up developing a group called the Camp Faith Group, which still exists today, I like to add. And that's where we started congregating together. We got, matter of fact, everything was opening up for us. You know, when you use God, when you employ God's will, things open up for you. Things happen for you. And they made room for us to have a room of our own. You know what I mean? This didn't have nothing to do with the chapel, didn't have nothing. Well, we went to the institution, bigwigs, and solicited them and, you know, let them know what we wanted to do. And they made room for us. So we gave us our own room to be able to congregate like two or three different times a week to congregate with the brothers, and it grew
okay.
from like five people to like 38 in a matter of a month or so.
Wow. Now, who led that? Did you lead it?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Wow. Okay. So you get out in 2008, and you just kind of sit back, you survey some things, you now have a relationship with God, and you come in contact with who is now your wife, but you meet Queen Esther actually in your brother's store. Can you tell us about that period of time in your life?
Oh yeah, well, you know, like I said, I was focused on helping him with his store and watching his store grow. You know what I mean? Because actually, I was proud of him. You know what I mean? Because he took it upon himself and showed some entrepreneurship. And I like to think I had a little inspiration in that. You know what I mean? Helped him to develop that mindset to go get his own. And I was proud of him, and I wanted to do what I could to help him and see his business prosper. So I helped. I was in there with him daily, trying to work on it and build it up. And probably it wasn't too long after I got there. Probably maybe about a day or two after I got there, where this young lady come walking through, and first thing I did was ask my brother, "Who that?" "Who's that?" He said, who's that? He said, that's Joy, his wife's sister. I said, "Wow, okay, all right." And we married now.
Okay. We're gonna hear Queen's story in just a few minutes, because her story was a little bit different than yours. Do you remember, so the first time you asked her out on a date, do you remember where you went? This is your version of the story. Don't look at her.
The first time that I actually asked, well, actually we bumped into each other in a bar once, and when we bumped into each other, we had a little conversation, and then from then on we just started talking on the phone or whatever. And then one day we did go out. We went out to a restaurant with, what was it? Me, you, and my son. Me, you, and Tremont, right?
Well, that wasn't her. Okay, I'll let her tell you that part.
But the way I remember it is, the next thing I remember was when myself, her, and this was when I like first introduced her to my son, because I had a son, a previous son. So I met her. She met my son, and we went out and ate. And then the next thing you know, we was married. That's all I remember.
Okay. Queen, we need you to unmute your phone right now. We're going to get the real version of the story. Queen, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. I want to thank you, first of all, for being on the show. Thank you for being so patient. You have to listen through all of Derek's stuff. But we want to hear your version of when you met Derek in your in his brother's store. What was going through your mind when you met him and you realized that he was into you and looking at you and admiring you? What was going through your mind at this time?
Mm-hmm. You know, man, never I remember the correct story. But what was going through my mind, I really wasn't really paying no attention. Like I said, I just was walking through, "Hey, how you doing?" And I just kept it going. But when I seen that he was not going to give up, kept trying to talk to me, and when I seen him in the bar, like he said, the next time around, you know, I really caught his attention, because he always seen me dressed in church clothes or my work clothes. That's what he say. Mm-hmm. He never really saw me dressed down or, you know, in just regular clothes. He always seen me in my church clothes or my work clothes. But I never really paid attention. I just kept it moving, kept it going, you know. Just like, okay, just blew it off, never really paid him no attention.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so where did you go on your first date? Do you remember?
Yes, I remember. Our first actual date that he actually took me out, we was at a restaurant. We was not with his son. Beep, he was wrong. Oh, that was the second time around. But we went to the Cheesecake Factory, and then we went bowling. I don't know if you remember bowling. That was our actual first date with just me and him.
When did you know that Derek was the one? Like, this is the guy for me.
After dating him for a year, I realized he was the one for me. He, you know, he had a lot of qualities that I liked in him. He was determined. He was not giving up. That was one of the qualities I love about him. That let me know he's the type of man that won't give up easily. You know, he keep trying, he keep going for it. And he had a lot of qualities, good qualities, that I wanted in a man, that I liked in a man. You know, so I was like, he looked like he's going to be the one for me. Seems like he's the right one for me.
Mm-hmm. So I heard you earlier when we talked, I heard you kept saying, you know, he's a person that never gives up, or he doesn't easily give up. How does that quality now play into now that you're married, he's a father, just all the things that you have gone through within your marriage? How has that one quality played a role in what you guys share together?
For instance, right now he's not giving up. Far as our establishment, he's not giving up. He's not going to let nobody tear him down. He's going to, do what's best, of course, but he's not giving up. He's not going to give up easy. I mean, I like to look at it. If far as 106, if it's something that, let me see the word I'm looking for. If we're going to shut 106 down, it's going to be because of we want to. We're not going to be because of somebody else is treating us wrong, not treating us fairly, treating us right. We're going to give it our best try, go with it with our all, and, go forward, especially when we're doing the right thing. He's not giving up. Not when he's doing the right thing. He's trying. He's doing everything they ask him to do. He's not giving up. As far as anything that goes with 106, with our marriage, with our children, he's not going to give up. That's the type of man he is.
Wow. So, ladies, if you're listening, that's a good quality to have, a guy that's not going to give up, because marriage is so difficult, when you agree?
Mm-hmm.
And there are many times where you feel like you can't do it, you don't want to do it, you're better off single, and of course Derek, who is in a nightclub where there are many women who pass him by, or, they may flirt with him or whatever, and so it's easy to just give up. That's easy to do. But because he has this relentless, resilient quality, that never give up, never say no kind of attitude, I think that's probably what's kept you over the years. How long have you guys been married?
It would be 4 years.
4 years? Wow.
In December.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Derek, you still with me?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm over here wiping tears from my eyes.
Derek, what do you think makes your relationship work?
Well, first of all, and I know this might sound kind of cliche-ish, but we do genuinely love each other. And that, I think, is what's key to us maintaining and getting where we are and getting where we're going, where we're trying to be. You know what I mean? Because, mm-hmm. We, like anybody else, we do the same thing that any human couples go through, whatever, but our foundation is solid because I know that this woman loves me and I know that I love her with everything I got. So that's what keeps us. I believe that's what keeps us.
Okay. How did you propose to Queen?
It was corny. She might not think it was corny, but we had just gone through another one of our incidents with this 106 thing. And we was having a black and white party for her 24th birthday. And the night before the party, Steubenville police, doing what they do, raided my place once again and practically robbed me. I guess you could say they did rob me. They took all my furniture. They took all my TVs off the wall. They took my music. They took everything. They took almost everything up out of there. And
they took your music? Yes,
they took everything. They took everything. It was really like a legal robbery, I guess you can call it, because they wore badges and there wasn't much I could do to contest it. So I couldn't stop them from taking my stuff, even though it was illegal. But, because they ended up returning the stuff eventually, but they took all my stuff. But the next day, that night, when the police put me in handcuffs and took me away, Queen stood the ground for my property, for my building. She didn't want to leave. She was not going to leave until she knew that the property was secured and that everything was being done right. And once I learned that, because her desire to make sure that everything was straight of mine actually led them to take her to jail too. So they didn't actually lock her up.
On her birthday eve, yes.
They brought her in, but they didn't book her in. They just booked her in and let her go right back out. And when she walked out, when she was walking out that jail, and I was still where I could see her, when she was walking out that jail, I said, that's going to be my wife. That's going to be my wife right there.
So you got out of jail.
So when I got out of jail, like a couple hours later, like maybe, I think it took like a few hours for the bondsman to get down there. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning or so. It was about 5 o'clock, I think. Remember, it was about 5 o'clock when I got to the jail. It was about 8 o'clock when I got out. The next night, I ended up scraping together some music, some chairs, some tables, and put everything else together so we could still continue with her party. We had her party. The party went on it might not have been as huge as it would have been without that little interruption, but we ended up having her party anyway. We had a nice time. We enjoyed ourselves. And at the end of the night, when we went home, before we went to sleep, I got down on one knee on the side of the bed and asked her to be my wife.
Aww, how sweet. And obviously she said, yes, Queen, I'm coming back to you. You're a pastor's daughter, right? So you're a pastor's child. What church is your father the pastor of? What's the name of the church?
Faith and Power Deliverance Church.
Faith and Power Deliverance Church. So how did your father feel about you dating a guy with a past like Derek's? Did he have any problems with it? Did he not like Derek at first?
No, he liked it, Derek. My parents, him and my mother, they're more concerned about your soul more than anything. You know, they want their children to be saved, their children's spouse to be saved. You know, they want him about the future, what he has to hold in the future. Is he going to take care, you know, my daughter? And is he going to live for Christ? They're more concerned about, you know, us living for Christ and living right and doing what we're supposed to do as far as church and Christ-wise. They don't look at your past because they know many people can change. You know, no matter what your past is, they look at how you are today and how you live in your life. And, you know, they look at your future of your life. That's what my parents looked at.
Mm-hmm. Obviously you grew up in a church. So what did you mm-hmm. learn from growing up in a church that helps you with being a wife and a mother today?
The most important thing I learned is to pray. You know, always ask God, get on your knees and pray. I believe God can fix everything. If you put everything in God's hands and, you know, let him be controlled of everything, he can fix it no matter what it is. And that's the main thing I learned growing up in church, to pray and to put everything in his hands. And that's what I do until this day, and I'm going to continue to do it, is to pray. Let God control everything no matter what it is.
Derek, I now figured out why you have 9 lives. You got a praying wife at home. She's on her knees holding it down. Okay. Queen, you have such an interesting name, Queen Esther. Why did your parents name you Queen Esther? Because that's not just a name that you just say, oh, I think we're going to name our child Queen Esther. Like, there was obviously some thought put into this.
Yeah.
So do you know why they named you Queen Esther?
It was a meaning behind it, and I'm named as the Bible, Esther. She became a queen, and they called her Queen Esther. And, you know, she had favor in God. She was very favored by the king, her husband, and she was a praying woman. Like I said at the beginning when we were talking earlier, she's the one prayed for her people to be free. And it had meaning behind that name. And my parents, you know, they seen the meaning. They tried to name all their children with meaning behind it, with some power. Because, you know, believe it or not, your name really what carries you and, you know, helps speak over your life. If you pick a name with a meaning name, with, you know, with some meaning behind it, it's going to, you know, speak over your life as far as, you know, it's going to, help you grow into a person that you should grow into when you got some meaning behind it. So the queen, Queen Esther, you know, I look up to that one. That's a great story. She was a very beautiful woman. I said, I'm going to be like that woman someday, Queen Esther. And that's what my mom said until this day. I named because who she was named you that name, and because that's how I want you to be like her. She was a praying woman, a fear-guarding woman, and she has favor in the eyesight of the king and many people. So that's why they named you that.
The first time I met you, and I probably met you before then, but and you were a little girl, you know, but the first time I think I really took notice of you, I would say, I went to you and Derek's anniversary party that you had, and we happened to be doing a raffle. My friends and I were doing a toy gift drive for Christmas, and we were trying to raise money and get toys from the community to give out to less fortunate families. And while I was there, it happened to be your anniversary, and Derek got the mic and he called you to the to center stage, and you had on this I believe you had on a gold outfit, and you had on these stiletto heels that were about eight inches high, and you walked to the middle of the floor, and I said, who is this? And they said, that's Queen. I said, that's the Queen? Why y'all calling her Queen? They said, that's her name, Queen Esther. And you just walked to the middle of the floor with your head held high, your back was straight. I said, well, she is. She's walking around like she's a little queen. But I just was like, yeah, it just took my breath away. I was thinking, oh, my goodness, there was something about you. There was just a glow on you. And at the time, I didn't know that your father was a pastor. I didn't know that you were such a praying woman. But it's all starting to come together as I've been interviewing you and Derek for this interview. But Derek, I just want you – I hope you realize what you got, because you got a good one here. All right, so – Queen, you said that all of your parents put thought behind all of your siblings' names. Tell us your siblings' names, because I'm interested to hear their names.
There's Glory, there's Joy, Angel, Stephen, Josh, Joseph, Daniel, David, Nathaniel. The only two that don't have Bible names is Shuri and Fred. The rest of us have all Bible names.
Shuri. Wow. So how many siblings do you have?
It's 12 of us all together.
Oh, my goodness. And, okay, so how many bedrooms did you have in your house when you were growing up?
We had such a huge house. I'd say altogether it's probably about 8 bedrooms.
What? And still in there? What?
No, we lived in Chicago first. We lived in Chicago first. So
I was thinking, what 8-bedroom house did you live in Steubenville? It definitely wasn't my block on the north end.
Yeah, it was about 8
bedrooms. We had 2.5 bedrooms.
When we moved to Steubenville, it was only about 5 of us left. 5 of us, 6 of us left living in the house at that time. And we had 5 bedrooms when we moved in the house in Steubenville.
Wow, that's still a big house.
Yes,
wow.
We have a big house.
Okay, so where do you fall in the 12? Are you like the middle child, the youngest child?
I'm the baby girl. I'm number 10.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I could see that about your personality. And Derek, you probably know this being a psychology major. If I could find out, you know, how many siblings you have, where you fall within that, like whether you're the youngest or the oldest or the middle child. But when there's 12 and you're like the 8th child, it's really hard. But I could figure out a lot about your personality depending on where you fall within your family structure, because there's certain personality types of a youngest child or of an older child or of a middle child. But the 8th child, I don't know. Maybe because you're the youngest daughter, like you're the baby girl, there's certain personality traits that you would have of maybe a youngest child, maybe. But would you consider yourself a daddy's girl or a mommy's girl?
I consider myself both as far as my parents.
When you were younger, what were you?
A mama's girl when I was younger. When I was younger.
I could see that. When you walked in, when I saw you during your anniversary, you walked like a first lady. So I could see how maybe you sat up under your mother. You were very close to her. She probably taught you how to cook, clean, dress, everything. Because I could just see that on you, you know, when you walked in the room, you carry that kind of presence. So what's next for the King and Queen of 106? What's next for you guys? I mean, will you always just kind of host people at 106 and make it a different experience every time they come? What's in the future for the King and Queen of 106? This question is for Queen. And then I'll get to you, Derek.
We do have other dreams. Like I said earlier, we want to pass our establishments down to our children as far as, you know, they can do whatever they want to do with it. It might not even stay 106. They're going to do whatever they want to do with it. We do have other dreams to open up other businesses as far as, like I said earlier, hair business, game rooms. We have a lot of things that we want to try to do in Steubenville, in Ohio in general. I'm just ready for the challenge. It's nothing better than, you know, giving yourself more challenges.
Right. I put a quote on Facebook that says, if your dream doesn't scare you, then your dream isn't big enough. So I'm petrified right now. You should be.
Should be scared.
Yeah. Derek,
yes.
there's one more timeout moment that we need to talk about. On May 31st, I believe you told me, the liquor control agents raided your place. Talk to our listeners about, and this just happened this past May. Tell us about that timeout moment.
Well, you know, without going into too many details, I've been going through issues with this city of Steubenville since I had this establishment back in 2001. I'm really well within the parameters of the Constitution and what I do. You understand? Or I wouldn't be there continuously doing it, because if there was some way they could stop me from doing it, they would. So what they do is they find other little avenues to try to get at me, to pick at me or whatever. And one of the ways that they did was to, for lack of a better word, sick liquor control on me. Okay, so the liquor control agents tried to slip into my establishment and see and witness liquor being sold without a permit. However, I thwarted their attempt to get in on this particular night to get the little violation. So normally in a situation like this, you can't control what goes on inside. You can't control what people got in their pockets. You can't control. So people that was present at the place had a couple illegal things in their pockets or whatever. They tossed them, stashed them, hid them, threw them, whatever. And once the liquor control agents gathered it up, they a week later came back, like on the 7th of June or something like that, and tried to charge me with the some of the illicit drugs and things like of that nature that they had found. Well, yeah, so therefore I spent a couple of weeks in jail, just got out on the 21st of June, I believe it was, yeah.
So so you didn't tell who this stuff belonged to, or probably some of it you didn't even know, so you kind of took the fall.
Yeah,
how much was your bond?
Yeah, sure. Huh?
How much was your bond for?
Oh,
how much was your bond?
Believe it or not,
for?
They had me placed down. They had me down there under a $500,000 bond.
$500,000.
Which is the reason why it took 2 weeks to get out. Yeah, a $500,000 bond. Some unheard of. I know of murder cases. People went down there and didn't have a $500,000 bond. So, and my case came nowhere close. You know what I mean? To nothing like that. So they still put me down in the fine. But it's another attempt. It's another attempt to derail me, stall me out, and basically, you know, kill my desire to continue on with my dream. But I wasn't going for it, though. I'm not going for it. And
so
I like to say something else about what my wife said about the 106, too, also. To expound on that a little bit, just a tad. Well, like I said, we just want 106 to be our foundation. And then we branch out from there. Once we got that solid up and running fine, then we can pretty much even just hire somebody to do that while we pursue other things. That's what our mission is eventually.
Oh, okay.
Just wanted to clarify that. So just one thing.
And I did say I would get around to you.
Okay.
So during this time, so you're in jail again for like 2 weeks, $500,000
yes.
bond. During that time, Queen ran 106 for you.
With iron fist.
Queen, did you know prior to this how to run the place, or did Derek have to, tell you where to find things, what to do, or were you already familiar with how to run the place?
I was already familiar how to run the place. When we reopened in 2009, I helped him with that. So I paid close attention. I knew a lot that was going on. I was there when, from the bottom to start all over in 09 when we reopened the place. So I already was familiar with everything and how to do everything and how to run everything. And I was already business-minded. So it really wasn't hard to do.
Okay. If you are listening and you're logged on through our website, we have 5 more minutes left to the show. However, we can go over our time. You just need to call in. That number is 347-637-3220. So if you're logged in on the internet, you may want to call in so you can hear the rest of the show. Queen, back to you. Is this the first time you had to run the club for Derek while he was gone?
No, it isn't. I have ran it when he was, sick or wasn't feeling well and things like that. But this is the longest I have to run it. Two weeks, yes, this is the longest. It was always probably a night or so if he wasn't feeling well. So I knew what to do. But 2 weeks, yes, this was the longest.
Derek, why do you feel like you're being fought so hard? It seems like, as I look over your life, we kind of categorized it by year and we grouped it out. But when I look at it, it seems like every time you move forward, something would happen to push you back a few steps. And thank God for your resilient kind of never give up trait that Queen saw in you. That kept you keep going forward and keep fighting back. But why do you feel like you fought so hard in life?
We had touched on this a little bit when we were talking the other day, and I think I gave the shallow answer, and you gave the more in-depth answer. I'd be hard pressed not to identify my troubles and some of my troubles, especially as it relates to 106, as being a product of racism. I'm sorry, I don't like to pull the race card. I try to stay away from the race card as much as I can, but there's no other explanation that I could come up with at this point until you gave me the one you came up with, and it made more sense. But at the same time,
you say yours, and I'm gonna say mine later.
Okay, all right. I'm sorry. But anyway, yeah, I wholeheartedly believe that it is just the fact that I am who I am, and I have the past that I have. And I think that people get stuck in wanting to keep a person pigeonholed to their past as opposed to allowing them to grow and develop into better individuals. You
mm-hmm.
understand what I'm saying? They don't want to live down what I've been through and try to embrace where I'm going, because they're too stuck on where I've been.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll tell our listeners, like I told you, in a more spiritual realm, because I believe that we don't really wrestle against flesh and blood. It's principalities. So beyond the city of Steubenville and beyond the liquor control agents and beyond the police officers who did these raids and different things throughout different periods of your life, I think it's the enemy. I think the enemy understands who you are.
Yeah.
I think he mm-hmm. sees what's in you, not what's on you or what you're doing, but he sees what's in you and Queen. It's more so about her even. And so I think you're being fought because if you're ever allowed to freely do what you're capable of, I don't think the enemy wants that. So I think that's why you're always constantly being fought. I think you fight mm-hmm. the devil, the enemy, and when you fight the enemy, you'll fight all his other agents who have come after you in the form of the liquor control agents, the police officers, whoever that is, or just people hating on you, talking about you and Queen, whoever those people are. I think mm-hmm. you fight back by not giving them what they want. They want to pigeonhole you and not, they want to keep you trapped in what your past was. And
right.
so I think you fight back by proving to them that you are not what they think you are, you know, and just keep doing what you're doing.
My wife had basically said something similar to what it is that you say. You know what I mean? Because, like I said, she consults with her mother a lot, and I know that her mother is praying too. You know what I mean? And I, throughout their conversation, I know just from her own knowledge, she has mentioned, you know, something along that realm. Probably put it a little different than you put it, but basically saying the same thing. Yeah. So I got so hung up like they was hung up on pigeonhole me in the past. I got hung up on the race car, so that's where I stayed on that.
Yeah, I want you to free yourself of that. I don't want,
yeah.
you know, don't
yeah.
allow them
yeah.
to hold
yeah.
you back. You know, you and Queen, what you have is beautiful, you know, and I thank you for being transparent and real. You said that you have problems just like every other couple. You're not trying to paint this perfect picture, but, you know, you share genuine love, and that's reciprocated with both of you. So I want to commend you for continuing to persevere against all odds, you know, with everything against you. Queen, I applaud you for holding it down for your family, for your husband. You say that he
Thank
is
you.
Relentless and he never gives up. You got the relentless spirit in you too. You know, you could have been walked away. You could have been given up, but you stayed and you made it work and you kept your family together, and I think that's to be applauded by all, you know. So let's forget about who's saying what and who's trying to stop you. I want to encourage you guys to keep pushing forward towards your goals and towards your dreams. I think the community supports you in that. I think you have created an establishment where it is different for people. They have a different experience every time they come. Derek, you keep focusing on the customers and the people's experience and as opposed to the money. I think you have an excellent business model for your business as an entrepreneur. And I think no matter what venture you try to go towards, I think you can use that same blueprint towards anything you try to do outside of 106. You guys are talking about your dreams beyond that. I think that's something, that's a foundation that you can kind of build everything off of from that. So I want to thank you, too, for being on the show. After the first time
thank
that
you.
I kind of hung out with you guys, you all have had a special place in my heart. I've befriended you on Facebook, and I kind of keep up from afar, and I just want to encourage you in what you're doing. So thank you for being with us tonight. Hopefully our listeners were inspired and encouraged in some kind of way. I think you can learn from anyone's story, so I thank you for sharing yours and being very transparent with us tonight. This is my time. We've run out of time, so you've been listening to Time Out with Sylvia Crowley. I want to encourage you to tune in next week. We have I have an incredible lineup of guests that are coming. We have Charlie Wilson has agreed to come. He just won a BET award. We have Tanya Bianc, who is the editor and producer of Army Wives. We're trying to reach all sectors. We have a country singer that's coming. We have the Fletchers, Terrell and his wife. The Fletchers are coming. He was a professional football player. So we have a wide variety, very diverse group of guests coming on the show. And so you can find out who's going to be on the show next on my Facebook page called Time Out. If you haven't been there, please go there and like our page. That helps with our sponsorship. And we will see you next week, same place, same time. Take a time out.
Okay, I guess you're all right. I don't say nothing.